Welcome back to the Compass live stream, the best and the only live stream about proof of work mining. Glad to have you this Friday afternoon. We have a couple awesome guests lined up. The stream will be a little bit shorter than usual, but a lot more dense, and I'm excited to dig into some of our conversation topics. As always, like and subscribe to the video. If you enjoy the content, it helps other miners find this video, and more importantly, makes Will and I feel good about ourselves. Why wouldn't you want that? Will, thanks for being here to host the show with me. I'm super excited for this one. It should be some great conversation.
Yeah, really excited for today's talk. Nuclear energy has obviously been something that's been popping up into the mainstream, at least for Bitcoin, into the Bitcoin mainstream for quite a while now with all this ESG talk going around. And a lot of people think it could be a silver bullet solution that answers the current concerns of a lot of ESG critics out there and helps Bitcoin miners stack more sats. So really excited for today's show. Thanks for setting up, Zach.
Yeah, oh, no problem. Thanks to our guests for being here, Caroline and Alex. Caroline, welcome back. We had you on the podcast a bit ago.
Yeah.
And Alex, great to have you on. Just to sort of set the stage for the conversation, I'm curious if both of you can give brief introductions to yourselves, Oklo and the Nuclear Innovation Alliance, what you both are sort of working on and what you're up to lately. So Caroline, hand it to you first, then Alex.
Great. Thanks. Thank you for having us on, having me back on. Excited to chat more. I think as time has gone by since our announcement with you, more and more questions have come to light, and I just enjoyed talking about the subject more and more. So I'm the co-founder of Oklo. Oklo is a company working with Advanced Fission to build new types of clean powerhouses. So we entered into an agreement with Compass and are working towards building our first of a kind.
Awesome. Yeah. Some of our newer watchers might not be as familiar with Oklo as some of our older listeners before we launched the live stream back with Caroline on the podcast, but super excited for all the things you're building. Alex, over to you. Can you give us a little bit of insight into your day-to-day, what you're working on in the energy space, and maybe any interest or affiliation you have in the Bitcoin and mining space also?
Yeah, for sure. So the Nuclear Innovation Alliance is a think and do tank. So we're a non-governmental organization, nonprofit. Our guiding star is climate mitigation. And so we look at advanced reactors to mitigate carbon emissions. And so we work with companies like Oklo. Pleasure again to see you, Caroline, as always. And what we try and do is take kind of a perspective that is agnostic to any individual company. We're not an industry association. And that kind of gives us an opportunity to explore things from a more neutral perspective, a nonpartisan perspective. So we work with regulators, we work with the Hill, we work with the Department of Energy, we work with all sorts of stakeholders, and really kind of developing into an advocacy hub for next generation reactors. And I kind of work across all of those different areas, as well as kind of do broader energy market analysis.
That's fascinating. That's really interesting stuff. And sort of as Will mentioned when we opened the show, there's a lot of, I guess, excitement might be the right word, anticipation maybe in the cryptocurrency mining slice of the world about nuclear and advanced fission energy as sort of maybe a big change of course for a lot of the anti-environmental or anti-ESG stigmas that sort of crypto and mining in general have picked up over the years. And I guess that might be as good a place to start the conversation. Like you hear, and for some reason, I'm not really sure why, but there's a debate about whether, you know, fission energy is actually clean. I guess depending on your standards and definitions and all of that. And so I'm curious to know both of your insights on that whole part of this conversation, and then kind of extrapolate it to Bitcoin mining, whether or not, you know, nuclear and fission energy, it can actually sort of help ameliorate some of the climate and carbon and environmental challenges that our industry has been facing. Alex, I'll first hand it back to you, and then Caroline also.
Yeah, for sure. So there's no commonly accepted definition of what is clean energy. And this is a huge challenge in the ESG space right now. Some places include it, some places exclude it. In Europe, this is a huge debate whether they should be including nuclear in their sustainable development activities. I think the best way to really kind of think about it is just to walk through each of the impact areas that you might care about and really compare that to other energy resources. And so the big thing is never to look at any energy resource in isolation. You need to do it comparatively. And on that measure, nuclear is ideal from an air pollution perspective. During operations, it does not emit carbon. It does not emit any sort of air pollutants. So it's not a direct risk to human health. There are three kind of areas that I think it could be a relative concern from an ESG perspective. One, conventional nuclear facilities use a lot of water. They're some of the largest facilities that we have in the power sector, so they withdraw a lot of water. As we look forward on the climate side, that could be an issue. Two, there's radiological safety concerns, which are largely mitigated. I mean, the industry is probably the safest industry in the country. It's ingrained into the ethos of the industry. And so that's something that it's something that people are concerned about, but it doesn't actually really have a real world impact just because the industry does run well. And then finally, I think just the lingering questions related to spent nuclear fuel or nuclear waste, and then also mining. And I think those last ones are really the area where that is where a lot of concerns and a lot of environmental justice questions were raised. A lot of that is actually not based on commercial nuclear energy. It's based on nuclear weapons and related uranium mining for that and the legacy issues and particularly impacts on tribal communities. I think if you look nowadays and you look at the nuclear fuel cycle, spent fuel is still somewhat unsolved, but that's not posing a direct risk to anyone right now. We can manage that well. But the mining side, we actually generally see very well-developed practices, best standards now. So mining does not have the same kind of ESG impacts as it does historically. So I think if you compare that across other energy resources, it's on par with renewables in terms of the environmental impacts. They're a little bit different depending on what resource you're looking at. But one thing is, because we have this radiological safety concern in the industry, we actually have the most well-regulated life cycle of any sort of energy product out there. If you look at wind or solar waste, they don't have any sort of requirements for disposal. We pay very close attention to waste decommissioning in the entire life cycle. So that's really something that's different. I think that a lot of people don't understand about the industry.
That's fascinating and incredible analysis there, sort of across a very broad spectrum. I would ask you if you practiced that pitch, because that was so concise and well delivered. Thank you for that. Caroline, if you have anything to add to what Alex said, and then also maybe in some detail of how Oklo plays a part in sort of that whole scene of nuclear being clean and sort of pushing against some of those false narratives.
Yeah, I think there's the broader question of nuclear in general. And then I think what we're also excited about, I think you need climate's the biggest problem facing our generation, right? I think a lot of people believe that and are worried about it. And we need everything we can get. So we need to keep the old plants open, but we also believe at Oklo, you don't have to do it the same way you did it before. Emission free, low carbon. But one of the things I always point to and that drives me to be where we are is because not only is it low carbon, but total life cycle carbon footprint per energy produced, nuclear is close to the bottom of that list, including all the many different types of renewables, including solar PV, solar thermal, geothermal, and so forth. And really what that measures is starting from cradle to grave, right? From mining, because everyone be like, well, nuclear is fine, but what about the mining or what about this? And it's like, well, everything comes from somewhere, right? Like solar panels come from somewhere. Like it doesn't just fall from the sky, even though the fuel, maybe the sunlight, somehow you make those things. And so I think that's really a holistic way of evaluating what's clean is to really look at that life cycle carbon footprint. And on top of that, if you think about nuclear can either load follow or at least provide reliable power day and night, whereas wind and solar oftentimes in practicality require some kind of backup, whether that's batteries ideal sense or natural gas in maybe a less ideal sense. And so you're kind of tacking on some emissions there that are not even being calculated. So in my mind, once you really look at total carbon, life cycle carbon footprint, there's nothing that can match nuclear. And when you look at advanced fission, which is what we're looking at with Oklo, where you actually recycle waste, our very first of a kind that we're getting ready to build right now is going to be using recycled fuel. And that's our intent for moving forward for future plants. So when you're even recycling the fuel that you use, even though it's already so energy dense, I mean, it's kind of this crazy silver bullet that once people like open their eyes to it, it's like, wait, why didn't I hear about that before? Can that really be true? But you know, the science is there, so you can look it up and figure it out for yourself. But that's what I love to talk to people about. So a little bit more about Oklo, you asked the second part of your question. So it is in part about, you know, just recycling, I think is a big thing that we're excited about doing in a different way. But getting to some of the key points that Alex also brought up is, you know, impacts on communities, including indigenous communities and some other factors that I think have been a problem with nuclear power in the past is things that we also want to address. But by having really small powerhouses, we are able to site in a different way than these large plants. Also, our business model is to build, own, and operate and sell the power in the terms of PPAs to communities. So it's fundamentally opt-in versus opt-out. Like, it's not like this huge infrastructure project like you've seen nuclear power plants in the past be like many billions of dollars and a gigawatt size, and then ratepayers are on the hook for large delays and financing risks and so forth. We take on all that risk, and if people want that clean power in their community, they reach out to us for it. And so there's a couple interesting ways in which our model is just fundamentally different that we're excited about.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm glad you guys brought up a few points there concerning like how people view these energy sources. Zach and I are mostly running these Bitcoin circles, and specifically Bitcoin mining. There's a ton of excitement around both natural gas and nuclear. And we'll probably just leave natural gas to the side for now. But I'm wondering if there is enthusiasm for nuclear energy in more normie circles, as we like to call it. Are there people out there who are really excited about it, and has the perception of nuclear energy changed over the last few years or over the last few decades? Are you guys seeing that actively? Caroline, I'll actually throw that back to you, but Alex, excited to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think broader public opinion, and I can speak for the United States more so than the rest of the world, just because, you know, we're working here and based here, has changed dramatically. And I haven't gotten polling. I don't, you know, do polling myself, but just anecdotally, I feel like between, you know, when we first started Oklo and people like, what is that? Is it safe? I feel like more often the reaction is, oh, that's exciting. That's really interesting. And so I think people are slowly learning about how nuclear power in general, maybe ironically enough, I think a decent amount of learning happened when that Chernobyl series came out, kind of the bads of nuclear power, but also like just learning about it and where it's good. And that's kind of an outlier. That was kind of an outlier. I think a lot of us thought that series would lead to misinformation, but I think what happened was people were curious because it's such a wild event, such a crazy time, and so many interesting factors around that and concerning factors. And what they did was research it themselves and learn a little bit about nuclear power broadly. But I will say too, like when it comes to advanced fission, again, as kind of a different subcategory, people are learning that, okay, it doesn't have to look like even nuclear power plants that you it's not your granddad's nuclear power plant, I guess. And we don't use water. Like our plant doesn't use water. A lot of the new plants proposed don't even require water. We use totally different fuel types. We use totally different safety. We have different safety margins and different ways to do siting and different size ranges and different abilities to load follow. So it's just kind of a whole different animal that I think slowly people are becoming aware of. But I will say to your point, like, I think it's been really interesting to watch crypto folks just be really early adopters and early enthusiasts. I think in a very practical sense, and it's kind of neat to see where revolutions beget revolutions. And I think, like, you know, crypto is its own revolution, and it feels so natural that it would be partnering with this kind of energy revolution as well.
Yeah, the intersection of Bitcoin and nuclear energy is not something I saw coming about, but it's happening in front of us. Alex, same question to you. What has been your perception of people's like warmness, I guess, to the nuclear energy sector?
Yeah, so to maybe kind of zoom out a little bit first, I think it's really useful to understand the context. Nuclear is the largest source of, if you consider it clean energy in the United States, it's definitely the largest source of carbon-free power. And it produces as much carbon-free power as all other sources combined. So hydro, wind, solar is as much as nuclear. If you look globally, nuclear is number two. And for certain countries, it's a really large portion of their grid. Some of the lowest carbon countries in the world are low carbon because they have nuclear powered grids. So I think if you look at how public opinion has been changing, there's one thing that I think that's really stark. There's a generational divide. I think that the older generations, particularly especially in the environmental communities that were fighting nuclear plants, like and picketing them, are still very staunchly opposed to nuclear power plants. I think the younger generations, because we understand the risks of climate change, we understand that nuclear can be part of that solution, and we really do prioritize that over any sort of concerns that I don't think are particularly well-founded for nuclear in the modern era. The other thing that I think is important is that there's a divide between existing nuclear power plants and new or advanced nuclear power plants. And what we're seeing right now is that at the state level, there's a lot of policy battles and a lot of discussions about keeping existing plants online And one of the issues there is that those plants are owned by utilities, and utilities are not necessarily great companies. Those are companies that often are associated with a lot of corruption. They often are seen as like the big bad utility that's influencing state legislators. And so I think a lot of things that you see there, when you see problems in nuclear in at the kind of large scale, it's because it's actually utility problems that's just inherent in having any sort of large power company. When we're looking at advanced reactors, it's really different because they're a lot smaller. We're trying new business models like what Caroline was talking about. And I think if you look at something like Bitcoin, the reason that we're having this conversation is because nuclear technology can serve something like Bitcoin for the first time. Previously, the reactors that we were talking about were just so large that you were basically restricted to serving a very large power grid, whereas now an Oklo microreactor can serve a small community, can serve a data center. And so that is really kind of changing the conversation. And I think that a lot of customers are interested in that. One thing that I think is also really interesting is there's regional divides. And so like New England right now will not be building a new nuclear power plant anytime soon. It's a pretty staunch political opposition. But the one part of the country we don't have a lot of nuclear power in, the US West, is very interested. And a lot of the states there are interested for a variety of reasons. You have a state like Colorado that's a high technology leader. And so they're looking into it because they're trying to decarbonize because they do have a whole bunch of very technically oriented population. But then you also have states like Wyoming, and Wyoming's really struggling right now because of the death of coal. Coal is a large part of the state economy. And so they're looking at building a nuclear power plant to replace a coal plant. And they're looking at this from a community perspective of, hey, we're really worried about the energy transition. We're going to be losing our jobs, our economy. Nuclear can be a solution for us. And so I think you're starting to see isolated pockets that are growing into larger and larger areas of support.
That's really, so you stole a little bit of my thunder there, because you said a lot of the things that I wanted to dig into next. I want you to kind of explain or expand on a couple of those things. But it's fascinating to me that some of the areas you mentioned in the U.S. That are maybe like emerging or ongoing hotbeds for nuclear activity and build outs and stuff are also the overlap with sort of hotbeds for mining activity, like Wyoming and like the Midwest and Colorado and other places, and some of the places in New England and over on the upper West Coast are sort of the exact opposite, like sentiment wise from a state level regulatory perspective. I want to get into sort of a bit more about how Bitcoin and nuclear sort of meet together, like at a very low level operational angle. But first, I want you to like break down a little bit more, maybe if you could, both you, Caroline and Alex, like the infrastructure and regulatory landscape you're looking at on, like, I know we're sort of limited on time here, but a state and national level, like, where are the big battles you're fighting? What are sort of the big wins? Or like, so from a Bitcoin mining perspective, you know, we have some states that are kicking us out and other states that are like begging us to come set up farms in their states. And I'm curious about those sorts of dynamics you're seeing in sort of the nuclear energy sector as well, if you don't mind explaining a little bit more. Alex, I'll just hand it back to you. And then Caroline, curious to hear your take also.
Yeah, for sure. I'll focus on the regulatory and infrastructure because I think Caroline can really speak to the question of meeting the Bitcoin miners' demands, because they really do have that kind of front perspective as a company. When we look at the regulatory and infrastructure level, there's kind of two big issues. First, on the infrastructure level, we do not have very strong supply chains for the nuclear industry in the US. And that's because we've not been building new reactors for a very long time. The reactors that we have been have had all sorts of issues. And so even just because of how nuclear works, because you have a lot of things that are safety related, you often have to use nuclear grade materials that meet different standards of quality, different mechanical codes. And so what that means is that you need to have specialized suppliers, and we don't have a ton of them right now. And so a lot of stuff that we have to do in the near term, there's some like really high level things like higher enriched uranium than we normally have done, which is going to be a really big issue. But even just the very like small level, there's certain parts and materials that we have to go overseas to get. And so getting that infrastructure built is going to take time. It's going to take a number of projects. And it's definitely something that I'm starting to see as an emerging issue. The other big thing is the regulatory realm. And so because of how the federal law regarding this works, the Atomic Energy Act, nuclear radiological safety is subject to federal supremacy, which means that the federal government alone has the capability to regulate for radiological safety. So if you're a state and you say that we don't want to build a nuclear power plant in our state because it's unsafe or we're worried about the risk, you can't actually do that. The federal government has already said that that is this exclusive domain of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Now, the issue is that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has structured its entire regulatory system around these large light water reactors, these conventional reactors. And the way that they did their system is essentially it was kind of a checkbox, because most of those designs are so similar that if you have X, Y, Z things, we know your reactor's safe. So check all those boxes, demonstrate this with technical information and analysis, and we will be reasonably assured that your reactor is safe. It's a huge problem when you're dealing with a company like Oklo and other microreactors or advanced reactors, because they approach safety from a very different perspective. Now, we expect, based on the characteristics of advanced reactors and because safety is a guiding principle, from a risk analysis perspective, they will be one or more magnitudes safer than a existing conventional nuclear power reactor. And in the U.S., we've actually not had any member of the public harmed by radiation from an operating commercial reactor. So safer than safe is really safe. And the problem is that NRC needs to change all of their regulatory models and how they actually look at safety, because we're doing this new approach and we have a whole bunch of different designs that no one's going to fit into this checkbox system. And so a lot of the issues that early companies are running into is, how do you work with this inflexible system, which is increasingly flexible? The commission is trying to change, but it's also just, it's a bureaucracy. It takes a long time to change. And how do we make sure that the innovation is not slowed down as that change happens at the regulator?
As I'm listening to you explain all of that, and thank you, by the way, that was incredible information. There are just so many parallels between sort of the innovation that your industry is pushing for and sort of the battles you're dealing with. And like Caroline alluded to, sort of the innovation that we're dealing with also, like in the crypto and mining space and some of the battles we're fighting as well. Caroline, like same idea, same question to you, but curious also if you could, you know, expand a little bit more on the practical details of how all of this sort of has potential to meet the Bitcoin mining energy needs. And also just as to make it a bigger question for you, if you think like because Bitcoin miners get sort of irrationally excited about nuclear energy sometimes, like, do you think it's like a little overhyped, or are you, you know, pretty bullish on the mining and nuclear collaborative future there?
I'm really bullish. If you'd asked me, honestly, not that long ago, I don't know if I would have been as much as I am now. I think what we're seeing, I'll briefly nod to, I think it's really interesting to see the large existing plants also finding that as a way to kind of fill in the gaps where maybe they have less demand than they had before, or maybe offload power that they would otherwise offload in different ways and actually make that money producing and hopefully save plants that need to be saved. Alex was mentioning earlier, it's half of our clean energy. We need to keep it there and grow it, or just grow clean energy in general. We can't just be shutting down plants. And a lot of these plants are threatened, not for any real technical reason, but because of economics. They're not able to compete on the spot market the way natural gas can, and they can't compete in this way. You know, renewables have a chance to kind of double dip by selling renewable energy credits as well as the power and so forth, and get spot energy prices as well. So the baseload is perhaps unduly being kind of economically threatened. And in this case, clean baseload energy is, and that's a scary thing. So I'm really excited about that piece just of itself. For Oklo specifically, and I think other advanced fission developers and operators will start to see this more and more, but I don't know if they're really seeing it that much yet. Is, you know, a first of a kind customer is huge. People always thought, well, no one's going to want to buy power from the first one. We have competition for our first one, but the other interesting thing is to really maximize the energy that's produced. You want to run it at full power. Now, we can load follow, right? And we've told people about that. It's important to communities. But if instead of load following, for instance, let's say demand is lower at night, we start doing, you know, fire up the Bitcoin or other crypto, you know, at night. And then, you know, it makes it so that we can effectively, what I've been trying to explain to people is, they're like, well, why would you build these plants and, you know, just waste the power doing Bitcoin or something? Like, people need power. And it's like, no, it's not either or, it's yes and, I guess. So you can power them during the day, and when they need less power at night, do that. And it effectively subsidizes other customers. It effectively like augments, I guess I'd say, other customers. We are working, you know, obviously it's out in the public that we have this 1.5 megawatt power plant that we're licensing currently, but we're also working on our next biggest one that will be out and, you know, sooner than later. And you know, maybe customers find themselves somewhere in between those two power ranges, and, you know, they don't need all of the power, but they need more than the 1.5. Then it's like, hey, we could do crypto with the rest of it. And so it's hard to describe just how that helps with it. And because crypto and Bitcoin specifically is so location agnostic, you know, it doesn't matter where the customer is. We could set up a rig and do it there. So I think I'm incredibly excited about it and what it means for everyone. And I think what it means, we were on a panel earlier this year with some people, and just what it means for Bitcoin, actually, not just, you know, it has a bad rap for polluting, basically causing carbon emissions, but it could actually be, I genuinely believe, an actual force for promoting clean energy on the grid. And so I think I tend to take that glass is half full kind of perspective, but I mean, I'm practically seeing it in real life as well.
I think it's a really important point that you kind of highlighted that most people gloss over, is that when you enable more energy creation, you're subsidizing other people who are using that energy. When you have a Bitcoin miner mm-hmm. come in and be a buyer of that energy, well, everyone's bill just got a little bit cheaper as well, because you're being able to supply the energy for that power plant itself, which kind of leads mm-hmm. me to one of our closing questions, just asking what the next 10 years looks like for nuclear energy. Obviously, Bitcoin mining nuclear energy, pretty small still. And like, this is very, very early first steps. But for even nuclear programs like yourself at Oklo, that is pretty early too. So I'm wondering what the next 10 years looks like. And then Alex, I'll throw it back to you.
Okay. You're saying me and then Alex or Alex?
Yeah, sorry. Caroline first,
and Alex. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, for us specifically, the next 10 years are busy. So we submitted our first license application, and that license is not just for design review or say construction review, or it's design, construction, operation. Like, after we get that license, we can operate a plant. And that's slated for 2 years from now. It's a 3-year process. So that was a year ago. Yeah. So we're a couple of years out from basically starting to build our first plant and hopefully operate it. But the cool thing is we're not really going in serial. We're going in parallel. In other words, we can utilize the application structure that we use to submit other applications for other sites and so forth. So we believe that you can't just kind of talk about how important it is for climate and then say, well, we won't build our first plant for another decade. To actually have any impact, we think, you gotta actually be building more than that. And so we're starting with our small ones, going in with the bigger ones, and then kind of going from there. So the next 10 years look really huge. And I could easily see Bitcoin being a part of basically all of our operating plants. I don't see why it wouldn't. Whenever there's not demand on the grid, putting it there is at rates that are amenable for both sides is kind of a win-win for us, for the miners, and for the other power customers.
Love that. Totally agree with you too. Alex, I'm going to throw it over to you.
Yeah. So one thing that's really useful to understand here is a heuristic we use in the power sector, and that's the idea of technological learning. And so you see in other sectors, but it's especially relevant with energy technologies, that every single generation or iteration, you tend to reduce costs because you get better at things. And one of the issues historically with nuclear power is that the plants were just so large that by the time that you licensed and then built a plant, it could be 10 to 15 years. And you wouldn't then do a second one because the technology already got better. So you went and did something else. And so you never really got and broke into that technological learning. That's where something like what Oklo is doing with a microreactor is really exciting, because their construction time can be really short. And if you do this kind of parallel development where you have all sorts of lessons that are getting learned and shared across projects, you can accelerate that technological learning and get to an nth of a kind generation relatively quickly. So I think there's two kind of directions for nuclear in the future. One is just what happens with the existing fleet. There's some support at the federal level potentially to keep that existing fleet online with some directed financial support. That's really important. I think some of those nuclear plants are also looking at Bitcoin or other sorts of ways to keep revenue. And those plants, it's an optionality thing. These plants could run, the existing plants could run for another 30 or 40 years. And so if you close it down now, it's not just losing 1 year of clean generation, it's losing 40 years of massive clean generation. And the second part's what happens on the advanced reactor side. And I think there's really two distinguishing factors. First, you have microreactors, and I think that the 2020s in some ways might be the decade of the microreactors. They can get to market quickly, they can start these iteration cycles, and all the lessons that they learn can then help us change the regulatory system, help us open up new markets, And then we have a larger set of utility scale, which are relatively large facilities, maybe 100 to 200 times larger than the first Oklo Aurora. And those take a longer time to build. And those are not going to be ready really this decade. We'll have a couple of demonstration projects ready, but they're not going to start getting into this kind of technological learning nth of a kind series until much later. So the next 10 years is really just what happens with the microreactors and what are the lessons that we can draw for the broader industry. And again, that's an area where I think Bitcoin can be really helpful. If you have customers, the more of these things that we can build now, the quicker we're going to see cost declines. And so it's a catalytic effect. And so the potential decarbonization impact could be really high because you could help a new technology get to market and become competitive on its own.
And I might just add too, I'm really excited about the next 20 years partnership with Compass specifically. So
we are equally as excited. Yeah. It's going to be very exciting next couple decades for nuclear energy, for Bitcoin mining, and the areas where the two overlap. Alex, your phrase there, the decade of the microreactor, chat loved that. I love it too. It's awesome. And an awesome way to sort of end our conversation and wrap up here. Based on conversation on Twitter, there were a bunch of questions in the chat we didn't have time to get to. I think we may have to try and schedule a part two to this conversation at some point in the near future. But so much information and insights from you guys in the time we had together. Thank you so much for chatting with us. For everyone watching, Alex and Caroline are both on Twitter. You can find their information in the description of this video. Throw them a follow so you have to date with what they're working on, what they're talking about, thinking about. Thanks for watching our conversation this afternoon. That's all from us on the Compass live stream. Enjoy your Friday and the weekend, and thanks for watching.